The best is to take in between. Otherwise, you can get yourself confused. Oh, yeah, but the problem is the center closed at certain time. So you have a clock that deceives you. You will overshoot the time. But we are still early, don't worry. Sadhu, sadhu, thank you. Thank you, sadhu, sadhu. So our last month topic is still on the whiteboard. For those who didn't come or miss, at least you can see the title. Then if you want to listen to this talk, it's in the recording. It's in our Dropbox recording. Brother, you can use that mic.
Brothers and sisters, before Brother Teo starts the talk tonight, just an announcement. Tiratana Buddhist Society, our center here, is organizing its first inaugural novitiate program for 4 days on the 17th December to the 20th December. So those who are aged 9 and above may participate in this program. And if any of you are interested, or you may have children, you would like to enroll them for this program. It's a very short program. Expose them to the noble way of life. Please contact Sister Fu, and there's no charge, all right? But if you would like to participate in the sponsoring, you're welcome, okay? So that is 17th to 20th December. That is next month. This first inaugural novitiate program to be organized by our center here for both males and female. Okay, so we have notice, the program details on our notice board. And also for those who have been receiving email advices from our center, those the details, also the attachment, also went along with the emails. But should any of you have not been receiving, please let me know your email address and I'll forward it to you. Okay? And tonight's talk, I think that we as Buddhists, to truly understand what the Buddha had taught, the Dharma that the Buddha had taught, and that he wanted us to understand and realize, I think we all will have to look inwards. And looking inwards means the development of mind, that is being mindful. But how is there a technique, a way that we should train our mind towards that? Without that, I don't think that any person can understand, truly understand the Buddha's teaching without directing his or her mind inwards. But how has that to be cultivated? And I think that Brother Teo will explain. And this is to be cultivated as much as possible, apply it in our daily life. Although this word, in our daily life, we have heard much about it, but sometimes we are not familiar, not too clear about how our mind should be trained. All right? So, as usual, before Brother Teo commences the talk, will take refuge in the triple gem and observe the precepts.
Okay. You just compose your mind, develop the faith in the Buddha and his teaching, then we can commence the puja. We will pay respect to triple gem. We will chant the Thai tradition, Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. S Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakasango Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kame sarana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kame sumichachara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Usavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect, mindfully to Lord Buddha. Okay, very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Just now, while doing the puja, I must apologize. I forgot to lead you all to take the third refuge. we miss out the tiyampi, but it's okay. Whatever that comes with the condition, we do it. But when you are aware, you are mindful, you understand. But we do not disrupt the disharmony, understand? So this is what Dhamma is all about, before I go into the talk proper. Because if you understand, then you will not be rigid. Can remember the word rigid? When there is fixed view or rigid view, the Dhamma is not there anymore. It's not about right or wrong. So refuge is normally taken three times. That's why for the first time, we go for refuge. Second time, dutiyampi, then tatiyampi. That is what has been recommended. That is what has been shared and told to people. But if you are rigid, you will end up one, right and wrong. Then you feel guilty, anasana. But Dhamma is not about right and wrong and guilty. Dhamma is about understanding. You have the understanding and you understand what refuge is. That refuge is already very strongly established inside you. How many times you take is not important. It's whether you take with understanding or not. That is more important. So refuge and all these things is the understanding of it. So with that, we can start today's talk. Then, like I mentioned just now, the last month's talk is still on the whiteboard. Huh? The date also there, 24th October 2015. For those who didn't have a chance to attend the talk, I will read through the title because these are very good Dhamma title. Yeah? Then we had a very good sharing. If you want to develop understanding of it, you should go and look for the recording. It's in our Dropbox. The first Dhamma topic at that time was Bodhi Heart and Spiritual Cultivation. As you understand, Bodhi is enlightenment. So you must have the Bodhi Heart if you want to go this way. Even in the Diamond Sutta, Sakyamuni Buddha mentioned this very clearly. You must cultivate with the true mind, the Bodhi mind, not with the mundane mind, the conditioned arising mind. This one is a problem. So I wrote here, living beings who are heedless, if you don't train your mind, they will use their thinking mind, mundane mind, worldly mind, conditioned arising mind a lot. And they are hardly aware. That's why, like Brother Tay say, if you don't look within with awareness, with mindfulness, you cannot develop the insight and the wisdom, and you cannot penetrate the Dhamma. You cannot understand the Buddha's teaching. Maybe knowledge, yes. But the direct seeing that awaken the form and mind that allow you to develop the wisdom and the understanding to awaken, that one is different. That one comes with the true mind, the Bodhi mind without thought. Then understanding the importance of repentance in cultivation. This is asking for forgiveness. This one I have dwelt in quite a lengthy manner in most of my sharing. So this one I think most people understand. Then the third one also very important. Understanding the importance of kayanamitaship in cultivation. You must have good friends, Dhamma friends. Co-cultivator who walk the path of Dhamma. And you can find one Dhamma friend that has the Dhamma. That is a blessing to the individual. You only need to meet one. Then if you have faith, you know how to develop the understanding, you will progress very, very fast. Then the last one is how to see things as they are. When you can develop this ability, you will awaken. When you can see things as they are, without the mind coming in to interfere, the conditioning, the views and the opinion, then when you see things as they are, you understand the truth, the reality. Then that, not what your thought tell you, not what your views and opinion condition you to think and believe. So all these are very important Dhamma topics. Then today's talk is a bit different. It's very unique and it's a very good title because I also don't know how Brother Khan got this title. And he is not around today. I was told, oh, from a song. Oh, very good. Oh, sadhu. Oh. Oh, it's from a song. Oh, see, Dhamma song. This one is very good. He said, understanding awareness with every breath we take. Oh. Can you do that? Fully aware. Then, with every thought we arise. What he wrote to me is, he put the word create. Actually, you cannot create thought. The thought thing itself. There is no thinker behind thought. The thought is dependent originating. That's why it arises on its own. Dependent on condition, it arises. That's why it's called dependent originating, condition arising. That's why I changed this word to we arise. Means the form and mind arise. And the last one is every move we make in cultivation. So this one means every action, every movement within daily life, in the midst of life, because you can cultivate in any posture, any time, any place, anywhere. That's why this particular topic is very meaningful. When you can develop the understanding of how to train your mind to have this type of ability to be aware with every breath you take, with every thought that arises, with every movement and action within the present moment, then you are destined for enlightenment. You sure will become enlightened. Because this is, you have perfected your daily mindfulness. You are already heedful every moment, every instant. So today's topic is not easy. It's something very, very difficult to talk about. That's why when I saw the title, I smiled. Then I replied, I said, good, okay, I said, good topic. And very few people can discuss this or talk about this, because unless you have developed it, there is no way you can understand. So how do we start? How can you develop understanding of awareness with every breath you take? That is the first one. How can you do that? First of all, you must understand what? Before you even try to do. You cannot develop something that you don't understand. Correct or not? So what you have to understand is awareness. Because here, understanding awareness. Before you even move to all these three, if you don't know what awareness is, you cannot even start. So what is awareness? As a Buddhist, you will know, awareness, you always equate as what? You always equate as what? Mindfulness. And this is sati, or mindfulness. So what is sati? What is mindfulness? This is the first thing that you must understand. Okay, now recall to mind. After all this sharing, what is sati? What is mindfulness? Based on your understanding now. Yeah, come. We need some of you to speak up so that we can have a proper understanding of this particular words. So that you can develop the cultivation with understanding. So what is sati to you? What is the meaning of mindfulness? I have shared this before, even in Klang here. Very good. Sadhu. Okay. So sati, the first definition is sati is the awareness before the knowing. The knowing. So this is a very important definition. What does it mean by knowing? When you come to know something, means what? Means you must have perceived it, correct or not? That's why it's awareness before the knowing, is before you even perceive it, before you even arise the aggregate of mind. But human beings' problem is they are hardly aware because they are heedless. They think a lot. So this mundane mind, this thinking mind, this condition arising mind, which has delusion, think a lot. So when you think a lot, how can you be mindful? That's why you don't try to be mindful when you meditate. You don't go and do all those foolish things. Who is doing? Who is noting? Who is meditating? Who? When the thought is active, You already labeling, understand not? Labeling we want. Concept, words, idea, your thought are active. That's why you are never aware. So, before the knowing is before the perceiving or the arising of the aggregate of mind. So this is a very important definition. The moment you start to perceive, then the thought arises already. Then this perception, like our, I forgot the name, Brother Yap said, is from memory, respond to memory. Whatever that is not in your memory, in your conditioning, you cannot create word, understand not? That's why you cannot perceive. Unless you have wisdom, you can see things as they are. You can perceive it as pure perception. Like the Buddha said, in the feeling, it's just pure feeling. In the seeing, it's just pure seeing. In the hearing, it's just pure perception without the words. That is sati. That is awareness. But how many people can do that? Because if you are heedless, you think a lot, then straight away the memory create the word. That's why you cannot be aware. You cannot be with the moment to see things as they are. When you see things as they are, it's just like the baby before they know anything. They can see everything the way it is, but they don't label them. Can you understand? Means you don't, like this poster, you don't have a word when you see. You don't perceive Chief Raran or Dhammaratana, then the background scenario. So the moment you start to perceive, you are lost in thought, creating aggregates of mind. Then you are not silent. You are not aware. The moment you are silent without thought, you are already aware. So can you understand? So, awareness, sati is awareness before the knowing. Means the moment you are silent without thought, without the aggregate of mind, you already aware. So don't try to be aware. You only have to understand that the moment you are silent without thought, you already aware. So how can you develop awareness? That's why you need to train your mind. Then the worst thing is, they create an English word. They translate into mindfulness, but they never explain to you what is mindfulness. And you have been using that word for so long. So what do you do? Whatever you do, you always say, I must cultivate mindfulness. So what exactly is this word? How do they come up with this word? That's why you never ask, never inquire. Sati is awareness before this. So this sati has got nothing to do with the mundane mind. Understand? It's the pure mind. It's the true mind. So when you say mind, fullness, there are two words, mind in fullness. But they never tell you full of what. If your mind is full of thought, you become heedless. Is that sati? Huh? Definitely it's not sati, is it? If your mind is full of thought. So mindfulness here means what? Mind in fullness. Fully aware. Fully silent. That's why there is sati, isn't it? The mind is in fullness, fully attentive, without thought. That is the meaning. Understand not? That's why mindfulness is not mind full of something. Mindfulness is the mind that is silent, attentive, without thought. And that is the deep. Then Krishnamurti has another definition. What is Krishnamurti's definition? Which is a more clear and more meaningful. What did Krishnamurti say? Huh? he defined awareness. What is awareness according to Krishnamurti? Sorry. What is awareness according to Krishnamurti? Awareness is the first criteria is what? Silent, remember? Awareness is the silent, then choiceless. Observation or what? Observation or what? Very good. Sadhu. What is this what is? What is the reality, understand not? When you see things as they are, suchness. So to be aware, you must have two criteria. The moment you are silent means you are without thought. Correct not? You don't chattel. You don't verbalize. That's why when you are told to meditate with all the verbalization and the chattering, the noting and doing this and that, actively with the thought and the meditator trying to meditate and awaken. Thought-based meditation with all the delusion and the craving can never allow you to progress, can never awaken you. That's why with this understanding, you will come to know why Krishnamurti understands the mind so well. He said it's the silent. The moment you are silent, you must also be choiceless. Means what? No duality, no reaction, no comment, no judge, mental. Just like when you observe something or you hear something, everything inside is silent. Choiceless means no reaction, no verbalization, no comment, no conditioning. Then only you can have the direct seeing, understand? Direct observation, whether it's hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought, or the seeing. So these two criteria is very important. Silent, choiceless observation. Sorry, I missed out the word. Observation. Spelling mistake. Observe, S-E, yeah? Oh, yeah, S here, missing. Observe. Okay, correct. Observation of what is. This is the T. When you understand this, then you can progress. You can proceed with the meditation. And with this understanding, you will do it with understanding. Means what? You meditate to develop the silence within. That's why I say don't try to know. Just relax and silence your mind. Remember? Then how do you cultivate sati, mindfulness? What was the Buddha's instruction? He teach you a lot of things in there. But human being or cultivator, they seldom understand what the instructions are. What was the intent of those instructions? Every Dhamma session, before you start, what do? You develop the puja, remember? Pre-puja, post-puja. What is the purpose of puja? To develop your mind, your spiritual faculty, so that it can allow you to overcome the mental hindrance, the five mental hindrance that make you heedless. Then it will also allow you to develop a lot of merits, a lot of wholesomeness, a lot of affinity with the Triple Gem. That's why you pay respect to Triple Gem. You chant Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Then after that, you take refuge so that you can have this condition to connect every time when you arise, wherever there is the Triple Gem. Then after that, you renew your precepts. It's also a meritorious action. It reminds you of the importance of the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. That's why you have to keep your precepts. And to do it, you have to train your mind to be ever mindful of your mental intention behind all the action, speech, and thought process that you do. Otherwise, you cannot keep your precept. If you are heedless, you cannot keep your precept. Even when you are mindful, if you don't go in to develop the understanding of the essential Dhamma, you also cannot keep your precepts. You have to understand what constitutes evil, what are evil. That's why you have to go into the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion and develop those understanding. Then only you can be aware of these evil roots, which are the roots of all evil, that will bring about downfall, karmic negativity. Then you check the precept. Then you realize all these precepts, if you don't abstain from keeping them, you don't abstain from violating them, it will bring about downfall, negative karmic actions, speech and thought process. Then the law of karma will take over. You reap what you sow. Do good because good, do evil because evil. You will see all this very clearly. Then you inquire, why did the Buddha say we undertake the training rule in the first precept to abstain from killing and causing harm or suffering to fellow human beings? Why is this precept laid down in this way? Through inquiry, you will start to understand why the Buddha introduced this precept. You inquire, who will violate this precept? Who will bring about killing of fellow living being, harming, hurting, and causing suffering to fellow living being? Then you will start to develop the understanding. Only violent people, angry people, selfish people, deluded people will violate this precept. Only people like that, without love, compassion, and understanding, violate this precept. And then you start to understand. These are the being that has all the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. The evil roots are there. That's why they become evil. Then they violate and break the precept. All the other precepts you check is the same. Second precept, third precept, fourth precept, fifth precept is the same. Without the evil roots, you will not break the precept. So precept is meant as a guide to train your mind to be ever mindful not to violate this law of karma. So that you can understand the importance of wholesomeness, goodness. So that you are incapable of negativity. Then after you have renewed your five precepts, normally you would have your puja offering and all those things there. Then you develop the understanding of the significance of all this puja offering to remind you about the significance of all this offering. Like the offering of clear water, the offering of incense, flowers, fruit. So all this, you will link it to the Dhamma. Then you make use of this understanding to arise the aspiration. Because these are meritorious action. When you make offering, you have generosity. you have faith. Then when you rejoice with all those offering, all those wholesomeness, makes you rejoice with the generosity of all those Kayanamita who has made such offering, who has bring about such causes and conditions for everybody to partake in all this offering, puja and rejoicing. So all this will develop a lot of wholesomeness. Then after that, what you do is you rejoice with the sincerity of all these people, their faith, their sincerity, their kindness, their generosity. Then from there, you move on to pay respect to the Buddha, to the Sangha, to the Dhamma, the Triple Gem. All this will develop a lot of wholesomeness. Yeah. Then when you do it mindfully, you cultivate sati, which is mindfulness. Then your faith will bring about the spiritual faculties to make your mind very calm and very composed. Then when you chant Ittipeso Bhagava Arahang Sama Sambuddho, the nine great virtues of Lord Buddha, you recall to mind who the Buddha is. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. That's why he got this nine great virtue. One of them is he is capable of teaching all beings, man and God. And he is a guide incomparable. A guide to guide and train living beings to become enlightened. He is the foremost, number one. That's why he is endowed with virtue and wisdom, perfect virtue and wisdom. That's why he is called the Sammasambuddha. And you will come to understand that he was the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. So because of that, your faith in him, your gratitude in him, will become very strong. Then when you pay respect to this understanding, the field of merits is immeasurable. Then later on, you invoke the rejoicing, then the power of merits to make the appropriate aspiration for you to progress along the power of Dhamma. So all these are very important. Then the faith, through the understanding of who the Buddha is, will lead you to the understanding of the Dhamma that he teaches when we chant the salutation to the Dhamma. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo. When you understand all this, you will have very strong gratitude towards him, because this teaching can transform you, can bring about enlightenment in the here and the now, can bring about such transformation in you until you can understand life so clearly. Then life becomes meaningful, beautiful. Then you can live life to the fullest. So all this you will develop. Then you chant the third salutation to the Sangha, so that you understand what is the Sangha. Why is it also called another gem, triple gem? All these triple gem, when you encounter them, they have the Dhamma. The Buddha, being fully enlightened, he has the Dhamma. The second gem is the Dhamma, his teaching. The third one are the enlightened disciples of the Buddha. If they have already awakened, they must have the Dhamma. So because of that, all these three, you will develop the clear understanding of the triple gem, so that you know what refuge you are taking, so that you understand how to connect to this three gem. Otherwise, you take refuge like parrot chanting. You parroting. And you don't even want to know what are the triple gem. It's just like you make wish. You wish to be rich, to be wealthy, but you don't even know what is wealthy and what is rich. You make the aspiration, will it come true? It will never come true. Yeah? At least you must know what is it like to be wealthy and to be rich. And then you can work towards it. Yeah? Then the aspiration can bring forth the causes and conditions. It's just like people make aspiration to meet up with the wise. Or meet up with certain Buddhas in future. But they never make aspiration to recognize. If you don't know who they are, you cannot recognize them. Your aspiration come true, no? You meet, no? But you go and scold and abuse the person whom you aspire to meet because you don't recognize, understand, no? Oh. So it can be so dangerous. And it happens in life. That's why there's a lot of people facing karmic obstruction. So when you develop cultivation, you have to understand all this. Then it will give rise to the spiritual faculty that will enable you to develop the meditation, the cultivation. And it will speed up the understanding through Dhamma discussion, through listening to the Dhamma. Well, these are all meritorious sections. When you listen to Dhamma, straighten your view, you develop right view. From right view, you can develop the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then the samasati, the four right effort. Then samadhi. Then the Noble Eightfold Path can fall into place. Otherwise, you cannot cultivate. So these are very important understanding. Then when you have this understanding, you will pay attention to the puja. And puja is very important. Then you will reflect and contemplate on the teaching, the essential Dhamma. Then you will develop the understanding of the five mental hindrances that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. Then you will give full attention to the cultivation of the spiritual faculty so that it can allow you to understand spiritual things. When you have the spiritual faculty, the hindrance will cease and your mind become different. That's why that time you can meditate easily. Because your mind that has sada, virya, is very composed, very calm and full of faith, full of virya. You are not sleepy. You don't have restlessness of mind. You don't have doubt. You have faith. You have virya. Then it will drive you to cultivate. Then when you do it mindfully, with the understanding of what sati is, what awareness is, then you can progress very fast. Then as you progress, when sati arises, the form and mind will know. That's why I teach you to develop this sati. First, within the puja. Then, within the training of the mind in meditation. So how do you train this mind in meditation? When your hindrances are there, what must you do? What must you do? When you know your mental hindrances are still there, you are still heedless most of the time in daily life. What must you do? Yeah? You have to train your mind, right? To develop what? To develop the five opposite spiritual faculty so that the hindrance will cease. But before you perfect them, before you can develop them, you still want to meditate, isn't it? You still want to progress, isn't it? You still want to develop the training of the mind to be aware, isn't it? So how do you do it? That's why you have to train this mind in the meditation, in the form of meditation. So what did I teach you? You have to learn to decondition the heedless thinking so that the five mental hindrances can be kept at bay, understand not? So that they don't arise to hinder you when you are meditating. And you must understand this. So what are the skillful means that I have taught you to decondition the heedless thinking? What are they? Huh? First one is what? Mind sweeping method. You just feel relaxed. No more thinking. Then when you relax, your stress is gone. Then the body becomes peaceful. And when the body is peaceful, the mind is also peaceful. Understand? When the body is relaxed, the mind is not agitated. The mind don't have fear, worry, anxiety without thought. It becomes peaceful. It becomes aware. There is clarity. That's why there is silent inner awareness. It will arise. So this is a very important understanding. But mind sweeping method only allow you to train your mind to be quiet, to be peaceful, to be at the location you want it to be. Then after that, you feel, you don't think. That's why it deconditioned the heedless thinking. Then what happens is after you are trained, you want the mind to be at the location you want it to be, means you can improve on it. After that, when it's at the location, you want it to be silent, it will be silent. Understand not? Where you already trained. That's why initially you train yourself to feel, not to think. When you don't think, there is no thought, then you become quiet, peaceful, and silent. But human beings' mind state is very conditioned. They are very heedless. And it's very difficult to keep the five hindrances at bay unless your spiritual faculty are stable. You have perfected it. So working on the spiritual faculty, you have to develop another training. Through the puja, it helps. Then after that, you have to train your mind, deconditioned. But if your spiritual faculty is already good, you don't have to train. Because it's already in sati. The moment you relax and sit, you will go into samadhi. Your mind will just develop the ability to be quiet, peaceful, silent. You want it to be silent, it will be silent because it's trained. You want it to be aware, it will be aware. Then after that, you have to bring this state, mind state that you have trained, into your daily life. Otherwise, you can only be mindful and heedful in the form of meditation. The moment you get out of it, return to society or daily life, what happens? You become heedless all over again. Understand? You repeat your daily routine. That's why you never progress. At the most, you can maintain for 1 week, maybe 2 weeks, or maximum 3 weeks. And I guarantee you, unless you already trained, you become like before, heedless again. That's why many of these Karamitas who are new, after a while, they come and talk to me. They say, yeah, Brother Teo, what you say is very true. I've been in and out of retreat for 18 years, some 20, 30, 40 years. And yet they realize they have not really changed. They still have fear. They still have wrong view. They still have this greed, this hatred, this envy, this jealousy, this dislike, this evil root. They are not rooted out yet. They try to live as if they are without all this evil root. Where they suppress them, they control them. They don't want to get angry. They don't want to become emotional. They don't want to become fearful. But deep inside, they can't lie because they know there is still fear, there is still worry, there is still anxiety. Where they still don't understand who they are, what they are. And who died, what died. After death, what happened. So all these are the delusion, born of sakkayadity, self-delusion. That's why without this understanding of who you are, what you are, through this training of the mind to be aware, to see clearly the essential Dhamma or dependent origination, the dwelling, the Four Noble Truths, to insight in the phenomena, the three characteristics of impermanent, suffering, state, and non-self, you cannot progress. So the real training is, if you need to train your mind, train. Mind sweeping methods, step by step. That's why you become very focused in your meditation. You are not interested in like last time. Am I noting it correctly? Am I doing it correctly? How must I walk? How must I note? All those, no more. The only question is what? The focus is what? Am I heedless? You can be aware, isn't it? Then you realize you can't even be quiet for a moment. Anapanasati also. To be aware of the breathing, split second is gone. And you don't know the purpose of method and technique. You thought this is meditation. And you think noting the rising and falling is doing vipassana. You become gullible. You keep on noting with the thought, verbalizing the thought. And every time you just do this, and you think this is vipassana, then one day you will awaken. It's not like that. Without the daily mindfulness, without the Noble Eightfold Path, without that insight into phenomena, you can never understand the teaching, not to say awaken. So this cultivation, when you understand, is so different. When I am focused, I just ask myself a question. Do I still need to train my mind? Am I still heedless? Are the hindrances still very powerful? Then I have to work on my spiritual faculty. Then I do my puja. I reflect, contemplate on who the Buddha is. Why is his teaching so beautiful, so important? What constitutes the triple gem? What are the essential dhamma? What constitutes evil? Why did the Buddha ask me to take refuge, pay respect, do all this puja? Then how can I make use of this wholesomeness that arises through this puja activity? Then why did the Buddha's advice come this way? Sabba papasa akaranang kusalisa upasambadan sachitta pariyot dapanang etang buddhana sasana. All Buddha teach the same. Avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind. And then you realize it comes from the law of karma. When you have this right view, you will automatically understand why the Buddha advised living being only treating to avoid all evil, do good and purify. And to do that, you must train your mind to be heedful. Otherwise, you cannot. Without mindfulness, you cannot avoid evil. You cannot even keep the precept. Not to say train your mind to be mindful, to be ever mindful, to develop the meditation, to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness, to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. So that focus is very important. Now very clear. You don't have to bother about noting all this. You need meditation object, you know why. Because it is a skillful means to train the mind, to anchor the mind so that it's not heedlessly wandering off. So you need to train, you train. Then you find that the mind supreme matter is really so powerful and so useful, which a lot of new people who are not so conditioned, they just follow the instruction and what I say, they progress so fast. There was one sister in the Tuesday class. Eh? You listen to the Dhamma sharing, you know. She also shared with us. She was only with us for 4 months, June, 4 to 5 months. She has been doing meditation for very long, 20, 30 years. And she couldn't understand all this until she came to the class. Then she has faith because she got one friend, very close friend of her, who has depression for 16 years. And he saw her turn around within the last 3 years and become so beautiful. And he wants to understand what makes her come out of that depression. No need to depend on the drugs and medication from the psychiatrist and the doctor. She just came out so beautifully. And she recovered from her ulcer, everything, from all her past depressive mental states. Last time, her negative tendency is very, very strong, full of anger, hatred, and wrong view. And her life was miserable. She suffered so much. Then this friend was the one that lent ear to her. Then after her friend recovered, developed the understanding of the teaching and recovered, then she realized what she has been doing for so many years is all not according to the teaching. That's why one day he talked to her and she had the condition at then. And because of what she saw, she had faith. Then she came to the class. Yeah. Then the very first day she came, she realized this teaching is very different. Then she read the transcript, the book. Then she went through the recording, the teaching. Then she was so determined, full of faith. She just followed instruction. And within less than 3 weeks, she came back and told me, Bharatiya, your mind sweeping method is fantastic. And you combine with metta is even more fantastic. Well, the mind sweeping method brings about the training of the mind to be mindful, to be aware. Because you just feel, you don't think. It deconditions her heedless thinking. And she becomes so peaceful and so calm so fast. Then she realized, all of a sudden, after she has done it for 3 weeks, she can feel her heartbeat all of a sudden. That's why she was full of joy. Then she thought that was good, that was progress. I said, that is only in the beginning. Of course, she has faith. Then she continue to develop it. Because the inner peace, together with the metta, will bring about inner well-being. And the mind state becomes so different, so beautiful, so quiet, so peaceful. And she was full of joy. That's why you must have joy, pity. Then the faith, the confidence, the sadha and the virya and the mindfulness starts to build up. Then later on, I say you have to extend this into your daily life. After you have developed this training in the form of meditation, you have to bring it out into your daily life. You have to be aware of the four postures initially. Standing, sitting, walking, and lying down. Then before you go to sleep, I teach you how to do the daily mindfulness. Then when you wake up, the first thing you have to be aware of your posture. Then how you come out of the bed, how you move, how you turn. Mind and body as one. Breathing and the awareness as one. Start with kaya nupasana. To slow down the heedless thinking. To decondition the heedless thinking. So that you are always anchored to the bodily movement, the kaya. So that you can be with the moment in awareness without thought. Initially, it's for a certain period of time. Then later on, as she stabilized, she was so surprised. Within less than 2 months, it suddenly can become so mindful, so aware, so sensitive. Then, I think last week or last Tuesday, she was full of joy. Early on, she shared a bit already. She was full of joy. She came very early that night. She arrived before 8. I said, "You are the earliest." "Oh," he said, "yeah." Then he paid respect, sat down. Then she talked to me. He said, "Brother Teo, I got something to share with you." He said, "This type of meditation is so amazing." I looked at her, I knew, I rejoiced. I said, "Sadhu." I said, "What makes you say it?" He said, "Nowadays, it's so different. I not only can feel my heartbeat when I'm in the sitting formal meditation. I can even feel my heartbeat in the midst of daily life," he said. "And nowadays, like little or no thought at all. I have never had this type of ability through my all this year of meditation." And he said, "That mind that is so different now, so mindful, so heedful, can see so clearly all the essential Dhamma. And she can understand why in the past she cannot progress. Why in the midst of life she cannot be mindful. Why all this cannot be done until these things are understood and this training is done." Then she realized with that mind that has this clarity, awareness, mindfulness, it is so different. He can see the big difference between last time, the heedless thinking mind that has a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, excitement, insecurity. All the conditioning through the wrong view. How it projects, how it manifests, how it causes her so much suffering, fear and worry. Nowadays, whatever happens, she is so different. She is so calm, so peaceful. There is clarity. Then there is awareness. She just handled it. Then she realized this state of mind, this way of living life is so different. This is what the Buddha called heedfulness, ever mindful. Then she realized things start to change. Her life improved. She like very calm, very peaceful, with a lot of clarity and fully aware. Then everything that arises, like you are very lucky, you are very blessed. And there is so much joy and happiness. No more like before. Every day, unhappy, agitated, worry about this, worry about, attend to this, chasing after this, chasing after that. And the thought keep on projecting and doing all those things. So how come within 4 months, a person can just change and become like that? And she got a lot of gratitude, gratefulness. That's why all these are possible if you really, really serious about life and you really want to develop this understanding. And it's not difficult. So the training of the mind through mind sweeping metta you need to use, you use. Then combine with metta. Then stabilize it through any skillful means, anapanasati or anything. She did anapanasati. Then I told her to relax into every mind state. Then go into the four posture. She just follow instruction. Then develop mindfulness throughout the day. Sati sampajana. And within just this 2-3 months, less than 4-5 months, the mind can become so beautiful. Last night there was a newcomer to the Thursday class. That one also had his past. Those who attended the Thursday class talk, you know, or you go and listen to the recording. First time, you know, she has never done all this before. And last night, there were two persons. One person, first time also, couldn't understand what is going on. Yeah. This one, opposite. Last 5 minutes, 10:25, he start to ask for the mic and ask, report the meditation. Yeah. He said, he has a lot of joy. He said, for the first time, I had this beautiful meditation, which I want to report. He said, what you have shared is so beautiful, so meaningful, and it synchronized with what he had been looking for and want to understand. He said, the instruction that I gave during the meditation, she not only understand and can follow, no, I just teach her the mind sweeping method and metta. He said he can do it exactly as per my instruction. No. And she felt, for the first time in his life, he never meditated before, he has got no thought, no, for the entire session. And the mind was so different, so calm, so full of clarity, silent, peaceful, without thought. First time, never done before, and it seemed he was a Christian. But the wife is, I think, Buddhist, helping out in Subangjaya Sunday School, I was told by Brother Suyang. So, just imagine, that after that he had so much experience, he got so much joy, then he been very naive and very sincere. He even told us what happened at the end of the meditation. And you go and listen to the recording, so that I got enough time to finish the talk today. So what happened is, if you have faith, you just do these few things, you will definitely transform your mind. Daily mindfulness is possible. It's only when you can be aware, mindful, and when you have stabilized it, you become ever mindful. That's why that is what heedfulness is all about. You have to develop the training of the mind to be mindful, then stabilize it until ever mindful. By then, your spiritual faculty already very stable. Then if you have that ability, then you go into the daily life. Then this daily life, you not only can be mindful in the midst of life, the four posture, including all the movement, action, and everything, sati sampajana. Then your mind state transforms. You don't think like before. Before, when you are heedless, you think a lot. So the training of the mind to be mindful, then you stabilize it to the daily mindfulness. Initially, in the form of meditation, because you cannot stabilize this mind state, that's why you need a skillful mean. You need a method, a technique, or a meditation object. Then you have to relax into it until it becomes very stable. Then as you come out of your meditation, all action, all movement, how you turn, how you bend, how you stretch, and how you come out, how you smile, how your mental state and feeling, or you're fully aware, then you can bring forth this state into the daily life. You start with the bowing. Bowing is very important. Then have a good religious routine every day to do it. Every morning when you wake up, at night before you sleep, and in between, whenever you have free time, develop some form of sitting. Then do daily mindfulness. In the midst of life, when you go to office, while you're driving, while at home, you have to maintain mindfulness. Otherwise, you cannot be mindful in the midst of life. If you cannot be mindful in the midst of life, you are heedless. And the heedless are as if dead. There is no more training. The real meditation is daily mindfulness. That's it. Then after you have developed that, what do you do? Yeah? Your mind has become different. Then you use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. You start to contemplate and reflect on all the three right views with regards to law of karma, law of mind, citta nupassana, dependent origination, how you function as a human being. Then all the essential dhamma, citta nupassana, leading to dhamma nupassana. Then the dhamma nupassana, you start with the five mental hindrances, leading to the five aggregate of form and mind. Then the six sense bases, internal, external. Then the seven factors of enlightenment. Then the four noble truths. And that's how you cultivate. Then the four noble truths, finally you will end up with Noble Eightfold Path. And that is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So when you have this ability, then only you are heedful. Then only you are ever mindful. Then only this title that we talk about is possible. Then you can be aware with every moment of your breathing. You can be aware of every breath that arises and pass away. You can be mindful with it. This is anapanasati, anasana. Then as you are mindful, you have clarity. You are fully aware of your movement, your body and mind as one. That is specific phenomenal awareness. Then when you're silent in the lying down posture or sitting posture, formal posture, you have general spacious awareness. That's why you progress very fast. Afterwards, I will read to you the email I sent out. That was based on the question that Susan asked. Susan is now in India. So she is not here. Maybe she can listen to the recording. Oh, make sure it's recorded. Oh, got light. So at least you can be quite sure until this moment it's recorded. So what happened was, that particular question that she asked at the Sunday class, Wu Bingqing Sir, was very good. She asked about lying down meditation, because I advised her to do it about 2 months ago. Then now she started to understand, then that day, she asked. And that was a very good question, because I make use of that condition to explain clearly after I read to you. Those who have read the email, you already have some idea. But if I don't read to you, I don't think you can get much out of it unless you are a cultivator, unless you have developed understanding. So this first part, now you will understand it's possible. But most people do it in the formal posture. They are only mindful of the in and out breath during formal meditation. Then some who can stabilize this mindfulness, they can also be aware of the in and out breath in the midst of life. But this can still be a conditioned state if you are not careful, because that continuous mindfulness can become absorption. Then they carry this absorption samadhi around with them throughout the day. Then like they are very, very mindful. But that one, they have gone into apana samadhi. It's no longer upachara samadhi. You have to release the energy field out. Then after that, when you release, all the thoughts are not suppressed. Understand that? Then it becomes a free mind. That's why you must develop mindfulness, awareness of your movement, kaya nupassana, even including anapanasati or whatever object of meditation. You release the energy field until it becomes a free mind. A free mind that is peaceful, silent, aware, still, and quiet, without concentration, without the need of an object of meditation, because you already trained, your mind is already in sati. You don't have to hold on to anything to remain mindful or peaceful. So this is very important. When you have a free mind, then you can be mindful of anything, not only the breath. Every arising of thought, you will be aware, if you choose to be aware. Then everything is like a flow. You have the physical flow. There's a specific phenomenal awareness with whatever you come to perceive within the physical phenomenon. Even your bodily movement, external physical phenomenon. Then all the mental flow, the mental phenomena within your own five aggregate of form and mind, within your own internal world, your mind world, you see them very clearly. Then everything is like a flow. You can be with the moment of awareness that is aware of the feeling. You can be with the moment of contact when it arises. You can be with the moment of feeling, and feeling will remain as pure feeling because you have wisdom. Yoniso manasikara. Wisdom at the moment of sense experience. Yoniso is wise attention at the moment of sense experience. Manasikara is attention. So all this will become possible. You can be at the moment of feeling, at the moment of contact, at the moment of activity of mind, at the moment of perception and consciousness. Your mind doesn't move. It just stays there. No sound. Then all this becomes possible. Then after that, the third one is very simple. Because this one is kaya nupasana. Every movement, every action in the present moment. When you develop the four posture and the daily mindfulness, this one will come first. When this one arises, when you are able to be aware of every movement, every action within the present moment, when sati sampajana is there, you will have that mind that doesn't think anymore. It's just aware most of the time, specific phenomenal awareness or spacious phenomenal awareness. Then this mind can insight into phenomena, awaken and understand. Then from there, when it see this thought, it understands. Because after you have awakened to the characteristics of nature, or impermanence, suffering, state, and non-self, then all these thoughts, what constitute wrong thought, what constitute unwholesome thought, the essential dhamma all become clear. Then how you function as a human being, dependent origination, all become very clear. Then this one, which is anapanasati, is to stabilize your mindfulness. Those who need to anchor it to the breathing, they use this. But when you are already in sati, you don't need the breath. Understand? Don't need the breath means what? When your mind is already in sati means what? Every moment of seeing is in sati. That's a specific phenomenal awareness. The mind is aware. You don't need anything to anchor. Then every hearing is also same, specific phenomenal awareness. The awareness and the vibration as one. No word, nothing. If you want to know, it can know. You have to function as a human being. You have to live life. But it doesn't think anymore. It doesn't react anymore. It doesn't have this, what they call, duality anymore. It understands things as they are. It can accept them for what they are. Everything is just the way they are. You are always at peace, no matter what happens and what arises. So all this will become very clear to you. Then every moment of sense experience, because the mind is already in sati, the mind doesn't need anchor. That's why every moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought process, you are in sati. It's like a flow. And this is how the correct training of mind and meditation can bring about great transformation, great understanding and insight. Okay? Now I will read to you the email. This one, if you have developed a cultivation, you will rejoice, you will understand, and you will appreciate a lot. Engbi, you haven't read your email. Where is Engbi? Oh, I wrote to you to ask you to help to print photostat for sharing, yeah, in the Tuesday class, Thursday class, and Sunday class. Your Pak Masuri is in India. Last time she used to do. Huh? So you help me to photostat 80 copies. Huh? Yeah. Mm. Okay, I will read to you. Huh? I wrote to Eng B also. Early on, I wrote to the Kayamita. I wrote to Kayamita. I told them this. I said, thank you so much for forwarding to me the below stated draft transcript. And I'm pleased to enclose the edited transcript for sharing by all Kayamita. This is a very good Q&A transcript on understanding lying down meditation. This is based on the 6th of September Platform Sutta. Winning Six Patriarch Platform Sutta class, the 9th Six Patriarch Platform Sutta class, dated 6th of September 2015, delivered at Huping Jingse, the Mahayana Vihara. We only did the transcript for the question, which is very useful. So, question by Sister Susan, she asked, Brother Teo, regarding my meditation, I'm aware that when I'm in the lying down posture, I'm definitely more relaxed when compared to my sitting. During sitting, I'm aware that there is more tension. So should I just continue to lie down every time I want to do the sitting meditation? So this was the question. Yeah? Now you listen. Then I reply. I say, it is up to you. Because there are time to sit and time to lie down. If you want to train your mind, it's easier to do it while you are in the sitting posture. Because in the sitting posture, you can maintain awareness or mindfulness of the in and out breath, which is anapanasati, better. Initially, the sitting posture is usually more conducive. But later on, as you develop the ability to have this meditative mind that is already so quiet, so peaceful, so clear, and so tranquil, which means you have developed the ability to go into stillness of mind, which is paucity enlightenment factor, rather easily. Then when that happens, if you continue with the sitting posture, you will find it very difficult to go into a relaxed state of a free mind, to maintain this state of tranquility and stillness of mind, unless you know how to relax very well. When you have the ability to relax so well, the whole of your body and mind will be in a state of complete relaxation, even while in the sitting posture. But because of your cross-legged posture, there will be energy built up without you realizing it. Then this energy build-up actually restrict and constrict the flow of qi. And that is why during that time, you are not so relaxed. And if you can, you should try meditating with the lying down posture. Then the mind that has the ability to become so quiet and so still will become a free mind that is naturally relaxed because there is no energy build-up. Initially, the mindfulness or awareness is at the anapanasati region. Then the breathing becomes very, very subtle. Then finally, one day, it will drop down to your heart or your mind base. Then you just stay there because that is the location which is very near the gateway to your nature. From there, if you continue to relax and silence your mind, then one day, that silent and still pure awareness that is without thought and craving will be able to detect the gateway. Then it will go in. The lying down posture is the most relaxed posture as you have found out on your own. This is a very important posture because in the lying down posture, you do not create any constriction or restriction in your flow of qi. Then chances of going into concentration is much less. Because this energy cannot build up. If you are in the cross-legged position, all of your energy field and qi, they will be building up without you knowing. Then from your spine, it can go up to your brain. Then you can push it up to develop all the jhanas. But if you are in the lying down posture and you know how to relax into it, all this energy field, they will not build up. The moment you relax into it, it will stabilize. Then after that, it will become very quiet, very still, until you are very sensitive. During that time, you will come to understand that the lying down posture is the best posture. You can detect the gateway after you have become very quiet and very still, that all of your yin and yang energy, which you have developed and stored up earlier on, whether via mindfulness or energy field, like Qigong, Tai Chi, Dan Tian, Yoga, Wai Tan Kong, or whatever energy field related practice, you will all, they will all melt into the gateway. And during that time, the meditator or the cultivator in bracket, which is the form and mind that is in that state, will understand. Because all of this yin and yang energy, as it goes through the gateway, will be transformed and purified into pure energy. This is the pure energy that is already intelligent and wise. This one is not thought-based, because there is no thought behind. You just silent, relax, and aware. And the last support is trust. You're just silent and don't do anything. No thought involved. Then the pure energy will develop the internal movement, which most people or cultivator also cannot understand because they have never done this before. That is the real opening of all the nadis and chakra within your internal bodily movement. All this will happen without any thought, without any directive or effort, via mental intention from the thought, which means there is no will, effort or mental intention involved, and there is also nobody doing. So this is the reason why Jay Krishnamurti, via his understanding, said, wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation, and wherever there is effort, there is also no meditation. All this the cultivator will come to understand clearly later on. When this transformation happens, your mind will become very still, very quiet, and very tranquil, very fast, very easily. Then after that, you can even maintain this state of mindfulness or awareness in the midst of daily life very easily. Because by the time you can detect your gateway, you must have already progressed in your meditation. And you must have already touched your nature. Which means you are already like Hui Ning and all those other great beings who understand what the true mind is. So the key to understanding meditation is posture is not critical. You can use any posture, even in the Satipatthana Sutta. It is stated that all the four postures, standing, sitting, walking, and lying down, you can use them to meditate. But the real wisdom or insight comes from meditation in daily life. After you have developed all this ability to be peaceful, to be quiet, to be aware, and to be heedful, then you will have to come out into life and apply this mind state, which is the awareness or mindfulness, to insight into phenomena, to insight into the three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self, via the direct seeing to penetrate the Dhamma. And later on, to reflect and contemplate via the second turning of the Four Noble Truths. To prepare the base for receiving truth, then after that, any of the three turning, either first, second, or third turning, they can awaken your nature. Because by then, most of the time, you are already aware, silent, mindful, and heedful. Then it can trigger off any time. After you have this initial wisdom, only then can you cultivate the real Noble Eightfold Path and four foundation of mindfulness in a more refined and deeper manner. After you have developed all this understanding born of daily mindfulness, then you can lie down and do the meditation again. By then, it will be very different because during that time, you will understand very clearly and you will know what to do. Then you will understand that the lying down meditation has its purpose and function because to realize the more stable Nibbana, you need a formal posture, and the lying down posture is the most conducive. There are two types of awakening. The first type is via the sainthood way in daily life, whereby the realization of Nibbana is just a glimpse or a moment of cessation of form and mind. Those realized, they are those realized by the Sotapan, first stage of sainthood, and the Sakadagami, second stage of sainthood. Then there is a second type of awakening that is more stable and lasts longer. Those realized by Anagami, the Arahant, and the other great beings. For the first two stages of sainthood, the cessation happened only for a moment, or momentarily for one moment of cessation of form and mind. But that's good enough, because it is a because that itself is the realization of Nibbana. That moment is enough to awaken, especially the Sotapannaship and Sakadagamiship, sainthood ways. And this can happen in the daily life while cultivating the daily mindfulness. One don't need to be in the form of meditative posture. But for Anagami and Arahant onward, normally they will have to go into cessation for a longer period. To realize this second type of awakening, one need to be in a more stable form of meditative posture. During the early days, most of them do it in their daily mindfulness via the second and first and second turning of the Four Noble Truths. That is, we are hearing the sutta followed by contemplation, reflection and inquiry into what the Buddha had proclaimed. Then there are some who develop samatha meditation first. We are going into jhana. And that is the reason why they like the sitting posture, which is more conducive. But later on, they will still have to release their energy field and return to normal awareness, and go into daily life to cultivate daily mindfulness to develop the initial wisdom via insight into the three universal characteristics of phenomena to realize the enlightenment. Then after that, they will sit again and go into the formal meditation to realize the more stable cessation. Then sitting can also awaken them. During the time of the Buddha, a lot of his disciples does it in the sitting posture. But later on, those who understand, they will come to understand that the lying down posture is in fact more conducive. That is also the reason why later on, the Buddha during his Parinibbana, he was in the lying down posture. Then whenever he rests, he was also in the lying down posture. This lying down posture was seldom taught because most living beings don't have the ability to meditate that way. If they are not trained, they tend to fall asleep very fast. Then it becomes sleeping meditation and not lying down meditation anymore. That's the reason why it was not taught, because very few people can do it. And because of that, it was hardly taught. But for those who understand, they will know the moment you can do the lying down meditation, you are already a very good and advanced cultivator. Lying down posture has its purpose. It is needed when you are developing the second type of awakening, when you go into this so-called cessation of form and mind to realize Nibbana. In the lying down posture, you can develop it very much easier. You can go into it very fast and you can stay there for quite a while. Then it depends. If you are ready and about to do it, you have to develop some form of tactfulness, because you have to let those who are around you understand what you are doing. Otherwise, they may think you already dead when you go into this cessation. You are really like a dead person. The only difference between you and a dead person is you won't become very cold. You won't become like the dead corpse. Your body will not rot. Your body will not emit those foul smells. But you really got no heartbeat, no brain activity, and everything else also ceases. No more activity, no more consciousness, nothing. The whole body and mind is like no difference from the dead person, except that the stillness, pure energy of Nibbana, they are within your physical form. And because that being is in that state, so in order to prevent any confusion, it is advisable to let people know, so that when you go into it, people will understand. But as far as I know, you don't have to worry so much, because it is not easy to go into that state for a long period of time. It depends on your past cultivation. It depends on your understanding, and it also depends on how skillful you are. And most of these cultivators, when they go into this cessation, they will know how to come out. It is automatic. But you cannot predict when to come out, because it is the unconditioned. You can only come out of it when the conditions are there for it to come out. So all these are part and parcel of the lying down meditation. And lying down meditation is only to be done after you have trained your mind very well, after you have developed the positive enlightenment factor, until your mind is very stable and very still. And after your daily mindfulness has stabilized, then when you give it a try, you will come to understand that this lying down posture is indeed the most relaxed, conducive and appropriate posture. Then you will continue to do it. Especially at night when you are at home, you have to learn to meditate in the lying down posture so that you can rest very well, so that when you arise the next day, you can become very fresh and mindful. The other reason is because human beings spend almost 1/3 of their time sleeping. If you sleep 8 hours a day, it's exactly 1/3. If you sleep even 6 hours a day, it's 1/4 of a day. So the lying down posture meditation, you can understand and develop the ability to meditate in that posture. It will help you a lot. It can help speed up your cultivation. This type of formal meditation can be done anytime, even when you are resting. And finally, if you want to understand what is 24-hour meditation, you have to be skillful in the lying down meditation first. And then you will come to realize that you can be mindful throughout the day. And 24-hour meditation is possible. I can share this with you all because this nature of mine had done it before during the early days of its cultivation. So it's all up to you. Don't worry about your posture. Whichever posture that is more conducive to you, use it. You only need to understand your meditation focus by inquiring. Do you still need to train your mind? If you have already stabilized and no need to train your mind anymore, then by all means, whatever posture will also be suitable for you. Because by then, your spiritual faculty are already very well established. Since you have already trained your mind, hence you can meditate via a relaxed mind. You can silence your mind easily, and then you can develop whatever understanding you want. Then you will understand very clearly what this form of mind is all about. It is for you to use. So use it to live life, to meditate, to develop the understanding and to cultivate, and it's all up to you. Then whatever posture that is the most conducive and suitable, you will also come to know, because by then very likely throughout the day, you are already heedful and mindful. So there is no difference between standing, walking, sitting or lying down, no difference at all. Then meditation becomes a part of your nature. You are in that state of heedfulness or awareness throughout the day. You don't have to rely on anything else to be mindful. You don't need an object of meditation anymore. Then you will come to realize that all this method and technique or object of meditation are only initial skillful means used by cultivator to train their mind. And it has nothing to do with meditation. It is just to train the heedless mind to be heedful, to be mindful. And a lot of people cannot understand this very important point. That's why that day I forwarded one email regarding this to you all. You all saw it, isn't it? It was written by a monk from SBS by the name of Bhante Kumara. According to that email, he said he has been asked many times and many places about what method or technique of meditation he teaches. He said he don't know how to answer them. And every time he answers them, he finds his answer not so clear and inadequate. Then he came up with one answer which he thought was very good. I will try to get it from the email and read it to you so that we can discuss it. This may be good because this can help clear up a lot of things. That's why even monks and cultivators, they are also not sure or are not clear about all this. Like what is meditation? What is the meditation as taught by the Buddha? And what are methods and techniques or object of meditation for? So when I read the email, I felt I should send it out for Kayanamitta to develop the reflection and contemplation so that they can understand better. Let me try to look it up. Okay, I have got it. According to him, he said, I read his email, from time to time, I have been asked this question, Bhante, what method do you teach? And I keep having trouble answering it properly. They want me to name it. I don't have one for it. Usually, I resort to saying, I teach this and that. In that way, it can seem like I have a muddled way of teaching. Some time ago, it dawned upon me, I don't teach a method. I'm not interested in that. Instead, I teach people. I show them how to be free, how to free themselves from suffering in the best way I know for them at that time. Every experienced teacher will understand that every student is different. To think that one method fits all is unreasonable. Sometimes I conveniently fall back on some sort of standard method too, and that's when I am not performing at the best. That's when I am not using discernment, and the results aren't so good. Results are the best when I drop all this idea of methods, pay full attention to the person, and let wisdom decide. So I don't want to use any specific method, but whatever method or technique that is suitable, even if I have used it before, that is, one can occur spontaneously to me. So next time, I know how to answer the question of what method I teach. I try not to. I teach people. Posted by Kumara Bhikkhu. So this is the email. Then I read on. So with this, we can open up for discussion. What are your views and understanding on this, basing on your cultivation understanding? What are method and what are technique? Do you know why he has a problem or not? If I'm not wrong, he studied Byron Katie's teaching. And he also used Byron Katie's technique of the work, basing on the four lines of questioning to teach. And he also shared a bit of The Power of Now, a bestseller book written by Eckhart Tolle. And because of that, his student asked him, so what is your teaching? What method do you teach? He can't describe them because those teachings are neither method or technique. It is more of an inquiry. With this, I hope you all can have a better understanding of the above topic. Then I got an appendix which describes about Byron Katie's four lines of questioning the work. So hopefully, with this understanding, you should have very clear understanding of the Buddha Dhamma. With that, I will end my talk. Okay, 10:06. So you got any question? Maybe we can have one or two, So while I wait, I take a drink, Where is Brother Tay?
Any question from the floor?
You can ask me any question. Don't have to worry about the question. Whatever you can't follow or understand, you can clarify. No problem. Good. Pass the mic to the back.
Thanks. Thank you for the talk. Yes. So just now, when you talk about meditation techniques, the impression I got was that those were just methodologies and to achieve some kind of principle.
Okay.
But my understanding from my limited knowledge of in my time in Buddhism, I understood that the Buddha actually taught one technique, which was the
Anapanasati.
How do you reconcile this difference?
Very good question. So now we start from zero base. Assume we don't know anything. We don't try to be right or wrong. Use off your mind. What are method? What are technique? Can you try to answer? It's a series of instructions to do things. Correct or not? Every method, every technique is different. So what is it for? It's got nothing to do with the meditation. A series of instructions to do something is not meditation. What is the meditation as taught by the Buddha? To train the mind in heedfulness, to cultivate noble eightfold path. That's why the essence of the Buddha's teaching is the Four Noble Truths. Okay? Within the Four Noble Truths, which is the meditation? First Noble Truth talk about suffering, the cause of suffering, the Second Noble Truth. Then the Third Noble Truth is suffering need not be enlightenment in the here and the now, Nibbana can be realized. All these are not meditation. All these are proclamation of truth, noble truth, that can make you noble one. But the fourth noble truth is different, the Buddha said. There is a noble eightfold path. If you cultivate this noble eightfold path, it will lead to the end of all suffering, which is the enlightenment. And this is the meditation, is it not? So whatever meditation you do, if it doesn't bring you back to the noble eightfold path, it's not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So this part, can we have the understanding first? Then to reconcile, the Buddha teach Anapanasati, yes. But what did the Buddha mention under the four foundation of mindfulness? The opening statement. Ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu. O bhikkhu, ekayano. This is the only way for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for reaching the real path, for realizing the enlightenment, namely the cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness. This is the real meditation. And four foundation of mindfulness cover the Four Noble Truths and the Dhammanupassana, the last category. Then the four foundation of mindfulness start with Kayanupassana. You familiar with the four foundation or not? Oh, you don't have any idea. Never mind. You go back and read it out a bit. The four foundation of mindfulness is how you develop the mindfulness. There are four foundations where you can anchor your mind to. The first foundation is Kaya Nupassana, means mindfulness of the Kaya, the physical body. So your breath is part of the physical body. Your rising and falling is part of the physical body. Your four posture is part of the physical body. The 32 part, the four elements, they are all part of the physical body. That's why it's all under Kaya Nupassana, including the 9 stages of decomposition. When a person dies, they decomp, how he decay. And the first category of cultivation within Kaya Nupassana, the Buddha says, start with Anapanasati. Understand now? Train your mind to be mindful of the in and out breath. He never say focus and concentrate. That is to train the mind to be aware, mindful, then heedful. That's why Dhammapada verse 21, the Buddha said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die, and the heedless are as if dead. That statement very clearly says you need to have heedfulness. The moment you are heedful, you are destined for enlightenment. The moment you are heedless, you are as if dead. Spiritually, you are dead. So this is very clear. So Anapanasati is just to train the mind to be mindful, to be aware. Then what is heedfulness? The Buddha under Dhammapada verse 23 confirmed what heedfulness is. He said, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, and steadfast one, they will realize the bond-free enlightenment, which is Nibbana, within the here and the now. So what is constantly meditative? What is ever mindful? You combine these two, it becomes heedfulness. That's why to be heedful, to realize the enlightenment, which is the deathless, you have to be ever mindful. To be ever mindful, you have to train your mind to be mindful. That's why you start with Anapanasati. That's why all method and technique is to train the mind to be mindful, so that this mind does not wander off and become heedless, lost in thought. Understand that? Then after you have done this anapanasati, the Buddha say, don't do anymore. Go into the second category of cultivation. Develop daily mindfulness of the four posture: standing, walking, sitting, and lying down. You must develop awareness. Then after you have done this, you have to connect up all the in-between movements of the four posture. That's why he said you move on to the third category of cultivation, which is the daily mindfulness in daily life of all action and all movement in between. And this is called sati sampajana. Then you will insight into phenomena, like what I described. Then you will understand the universal characteristic. Then you will have mindfulness to see your mental intention. Then you will have the clarity of mind to understand the spiritual faculty, the spiritual teaching, the essential Dhamma. Then only you can contemplate the 32 part and the 4 elements and the 9 stages of cemetery decomposition. Then only you can move into the second foundation, which is Vedana Nupassana, feeling, mindfulness of feeling. Then after that, only you move into the third foundation, which is mindfulness of the mind, Chitta Nupassana, the content of consciousness. Then only you move on to the last foundation, which is Dhamma Nupassana, mindfulness of the essential Dhamma, starting with the 5 aggregate of form and mind. Oh, sorry, the 5 hindrance of mind, followed by the mindfulness of the 5 aggregate of form and mind, followed by the 6 internal sense bases and 6 external sense bases, mindfulness of the 18 sense rhyme. Then you develop wisdom, understanding. Then the factor of enlightenment keep on arising. Then you develop mindfulness of the factors of enlightenment. When you are aware of this factor of enlightenment, then you are aware that you are on the right path. There's a path and non-path, the 7 stages of purification, they will arise. You will become very clear. Then after that, you move on to the last category of mindfulness training, which is mindfulness of the 4 Noble Truths. This is where you become enlightened. 4 Noble Truths are truths that can make you noble ones or enlightened ones. They are called Arya Satcha. Satcha is truth. Arya are enlightened one or noble one. Enlightened one are noble ones that are very noble in their speech, their action, and their livelihood, and the way they carry themselves. Their action, speech, and thought, and livelihood are very, very noble. Then they have noble understanding of life. That's why they have right view. Then they are very noble in the way they live life, right livelihood. Then they constantly arise the 4 right effort to train themselves to purify their thought, to prevent the arising of wrong thought, unwholesome action and speech. Then they have this right effort to abandon those unwholesome action, thought and speech that have already arisen. Then they have right effort to purify whatever defilement they have. Then from there, they cultivate understanding of right thought, right speech, right action. And they have right effort to promote all this right thought, right speech, right action that are still not in them. Then the last right effort is to refine upon and perfect them all. That's why to do this, you need sati. The next factor of enlightenment, the next noble eightfold power factor is right mindfulness. That's why you have to train your mind to be ever mindful, to cultivate the 4 foundation of mindfulness, which will include the 4 Noble Truths. Then when you stabilize the mindfulness, it becomes samadhi. Then when sati and samadhi is there, you can see things as they are, and you can insight into phenomena and awaken. That's how wisdom come to be. That's how your mind transforms and it develops equanimity. Enlightenment factor. And this mind that has equanimity doesn't waver anymore. It don't need samadhi to make the mind collected and unwavering. That wisdom, that upeka, enlightenment factor, born of wisdom, is enough to stabilize that mind. It doesn't need samadhi. It doesn't need energy field. So this is how you can develop the understanding. Okay? Yes.
Last question, right? So thanks for the lengthy explanation just now.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I didn't get past step one.
Never mind. It's recorded. Later, you can understand.
Fortunately. So regarding step one, right?
Yes.
The principle, what you're trying to aim for is mindfulness and heedfulness.
And mindfulness leading to heedfulness.
Right. And the technique to do that is, one of the techniques is anapanasati, or you can use any other kind of
any skillful mean. Anapanasati only come in later. That's why the Buddha said, if you read the Satipatthana Sutta, the opening introduction, he always used this word. After overcoming grief and covetousness, then only you do the Satipatthana. You can understand that, huh? Brother Tay knows, it's in the Satipatthana book. After overcoming covetousness and grief, what is covetousness? Craving, desire. Grief means you can still be unhappy. You still have suffering. That's why without that, you go into four foundations of mindfulness without understanding, you are wasting your time. You don't know what the meditation is. You don't know how to cultivate. These are the initial wisdom you need to develop. Means you must have understood the essential Dhamma. The first turning and second turning wisdom must have arisen. The five daily contemplation, you must understand them. That's why after that, the essential Dhamma, like the three universal characteristics, you must understand it until the contemplative level. Then only you can go into the four foundation of mindfulness. That's why you need right view. From right view you start. That's why it's all sequenced out. Without right view, you cannot start. Noble Eightfold Path, first perfecter. Why must you have right view? If you don't have right view, means you don't understand the nature's law that governs life and existence. Then you cannot start. When your view is wrong, what happened to your thought process? Your thought will be wrong, isn't it? That thought condition, mental intention, that condition, your action and speech. If you have wrong view, condition, wrong thought, all your action, speech, and livelihood will be wrong. Understand? So where is your noble eightfold path? Collapse. That's why you need wisdom, right view. You need to listen to Dhamma and straighten your view. The contemplative wisdom is very important. And the first two turning can lead to sinhood too. Sotapanna-ship and Sakadagama-ship. So this is how you develop the training. That's why Dhamma got three phases. Phase one is what? Pariyati. Learning of the teaching, the doctrine. That's why you spend time understanding this teaching. Then second stage is Patipatti. Putting this teaching into practice, into cultivation. This is where you develop the actual cultivation. Then after you have developed this training and awakened, then you get to reap the third phase, which is Pativeda. You reap the fruition of your hard work. You get to live the life of a noble one, an enlightened being. These are the three phases of Dhamma. So that's why you have to start with cultivation of Pariyati, which is the learning of the teaching, the doctrine. Then from there, develop the contemplative wisdom. Then only you know how to start. Otherwise, you see, to me, if your spiritual faculty is there, you don't need to train your mind. Method, technique are not necessary. They are only needed when people have not developed the spiritual faculty. Like just now I said, not everybody already have the spiritual faculty, they only come for meditation. Most of them don't even understand what is spiritual faculty. What are the hindrances? Why are they not peaceful? All these are not taught most of the time. So how you start? That's why they have to come with method and technique. So that because your heedlessness, you need to anchor the mind. Otherwise, it will wander off. It is so heedless, so habitual. It thinks so fast. That's why you try to be mindful of the breathing. Split second, you are lost in thought. Unless you have already trained. You can go and try out yourself and experience yourself. As long as you can't even maintain mindfulness for even 5 to 10 seconds, then how can you be ever mindful in the midst of life? Formal meditation also cannot. in the midst of daily life when your senses are fully operating, God bless you if you think you can. That's why you need to train. It's not easy. But when you understand, it's not difficult. So the problem is when you don't understand, it's like very difficult. But the moment you understand, it's so simple. That's why I say, if you ask me, I say, it's very simple, very easy. But if you don't understand, brother, I have tried so hard. Then why certain kayamita come in 3 months, 4 months, they got it. And their mind can transform so fast. These are people may not necessarily meditate very seriously. But because they listen attentively and they understand what is being shared, then they, without doubt, they have faith. They just do. Like last night, that boy. Oh, that boy was fantastic, I tell you. Oh, he got his pass. I tell you, he will move very fast. Then he told me later on, he texted me, he said, Brother Teo, thank you so much for that sharing, is it? I need you to guide me further, is it? I got this inner call, is it? He also don't understand. There is an inner call, calling from inside, for him to go into this. And then I smile, then I reply him. I say, it is your affinity with the Triple Gem, especially with Sakyamuni. So when the time comes, when the condition comes, everything falls into place. And he can just happen to be there. Then he can understand, just first time, you know, nobody teach you, he doesn't know any Dhamma. Oh, he's Christian by faith. So all these are possible. Okay? Sadhu. Wow, today marathon, long. Anyway, it's a good question. Thank you so much. We all should thank him, rejoice. Sadhu.
One last question.
Wow. Can, no problem. Got any more question?
Any more question? In this case, can I ask a question?
Yes, 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 no problem.
Now, I think it was Buddha Gosa in his book, where he mentioned about there is no one suffering, but there's just suffering. And there's no one, no traveler along the path. There's just the path, which means that the Noble Eightfold Path. But in the Heart Sutra, where there is mentioned by the Buddha is that there is no Eightfold Path.
Yes, no so, Four Noble Truths.
Yeah, no Four Noble Truths, no Eightfold Path, no arising of ignorance and cessation of ignorance, nor is there wisdom. Can you please explain how these two can be reconciled?
Very good, very good, Sadhu. It's very easy. That's why you read the Heart Sutta, you must not miss this line. Kuan Yin Bodhisattva say, in true emptiness, understand or not? You go and go back and read. In true emptiness, when you have realized emptiness, there is no Four Noble Truth. No one born, no one die, no one sick. He know you, he know me. No one to be enlightened. No one to suffer. Because within the true realization of Nibbana is the unconditioned. The unconditioned don't have Dhamma, don't have words. These are for the conditioned world, understand? That's why the Dhamma is for the conditioned world. The Dhamma points towards the truth. You understand? It's like the finger pointing at the moon. You know, the Zen analogy, the finger pointing at the moon. If you want to realize the moon, you have to graze beyond this finger. Correct not? The Dhamma points toward Nibbana, enlightenment. Understand not? If you want to realize Nibbana, you must not attach to this Dhamma. Understand? And this Dhamma belongs to the conditioned world. That's why when you understand, form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. And form does not differ from emptiness. And emptiness does not differ from form. It depends on your wisdom, how you see, how you understand. That's why Mahayana say, see mountain, mountain, 看山, 是山, first level of seeing, mundane seeing. Then the wise one, when they penetrate, they can see beyond form, when they understand the unreality of form, 看山不是山. When you point towards the mountain, he say, no, it's not mountain, because the direct seeing, the pure perception, no word, nothing. But after he has become fully understood, or when the awakening deepened, then stabilized, then you realize the conditioned world is a conditioned world. People who are still deluded, not enlightened, Putujana, they will say, 看山是山. Then at that time, you don't argue with people anymore. Then 看山又是山. If you say it's mountain, it's mountain. The enlightened one come, no mountain. Yeah, no mountain. Because you accord and flow. You have penetrated. Understand? These are conditioned Dhamma. These are not real Dhamma. Understand? So there is no conflict. Everything is perfect in the Heart Sutta. Okay? So you miss out the word in true emptiness. That's why he said true emptiness is wonderful existence. When you penetrate true emptiness, life become meaningful. Life become wonderful.
The reason is for you to explain.
Okay, I know, I understand. Thank you. Means he understood. Huh? He wants to create condition for you all to understand. And because I think he also knows it's recorded. So these are very important sharing that can actually help many, many cultivator and living beings later on. Because this type of understanding is very difficult to come by. Very, very rare. Okay, thank you so much. Can.
Yeah, Sukhothu and good evening to all of you. Brother Theo's annual retreat at Cameron's will be next year, March the 12th to 20th, so it starts on a Saturday, ends on a Sunday, so total 9 days. I think that should be the fourth year we are doing in Cameron's. At this moment, we have 60 signed up, or at least indicated that they are coming. We wanted 40 to fit a bus, but there are so many of you. So we decided to add a second bus coming from Klang straight to Cameron's and back. So at this moment, there are 15 of you from Klang, 13 on the bus, and 2 decide to drive. So we have reserved another 15 seats just for Klang. People from Klang, so that you can get on the bus straight from Klang to Cameron and back. Don't have to go to Subangja or PJ. So those of you interested, either inform Brother Tay or Kelly or myself, WhatsApp, whichever. But there are 15 seats left for Klang.
Sadhu. Okay, so you want to do the sharing of merits?
Yes, Sadhu and Brother Teo, for your Dharma sharing. Yeah. And I hope the every session that he has with us here, all of you will be able to progress well, much more. Therefore, try not to miss his talk. Okay? So in ending tonight's session, as an appreciation, I'd like to extend the
sadhu, sadhu. As usual, I rejoice. Then I offer the brother Chua sadhu. Where he provide transport to send us here. Sadhu. And I also like to thank your Tiratana Society. The members, I think, or your society, I don't know, paid for our dinner tonight. So I rejoice. Sadhu. Then he donate back. So that's why emptiness. Whatever that come goes through 2 or 3 wholesomeness, then it goes back to the offerer. See? 0 empty, but merits already done. And you get to rejoice. That's why triple wholesomeness. So this is how you develop understanding, and you don't need money to do wholesomeness. When you sadhu and rejoice, you already have the good mind state, and you have developed so much merits. It's one of the 10 meritorious actions. That's why Dhamma is very simple when you understand that everything is Dhamma. Life itself is the teaching, your greatest teacher. Oh, I got one teacher, monk, he used to tell me. He said, life itself is his greatest teacher. He learned a lot of things from life. If you don't go through life, you cannot understand the Dhamma. Because the Dhamma is the living reality manifested in life. That's why Krishnamurti say, you can only develop wisdom and understanding through relationship in life. Nothing else. Yeah. And you must be fully aware, otherwise you cannot understand life. Okay? So with this, I rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Maybe we should end 10:35 already. It's quite late for this place and for most people. We will do the sharing of merits. We chant the Pali. Akka satta cha bhumata deva naga mahindika nyang tang anamoditwa chirang rakkantu lokasasana itta watta chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anamodantu sabbati siddhiya idang me nyati nang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang me nyati nang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang me nyati nang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo Satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the noble ones. There we end. Sadhu sadhu.